Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Before we begin, a quick warning. If you've been prescribed any of the drugs mentioned in this podcast, then please don't stop taking your medicine without consulting your doctor. You hear horror stories of what it's like to try and come off addictive drugs. Heroin, cocaine, crystal meth. But this is the experience of someone coming off a drug prescribed by their doctor.
It used to wake me up at 10 to 5 every morning with stomach cramps. I'd have to go to the toilet. Like some mornings, I'd just lay in bed and cry, you know, because it just felt so intense.
Debbie Lou was prescribed an anti-anxiety medication called pregabalin by her doctor. It's a drug that's being prescribed more and more across the country. It's not the only drug that is regularly prescribed by doctors that could be dependency-forming.
It took 4 months to come off my antidepressant, which was about four times slower than the NICE guidelines at the time recommended. By the time I got down to a very small dose, my entire life imploded.
So have we really understood how these drugs are affecting patients? And are we sleepwalking into a new crisis in addiction? You're listening to Stories of Our Times from The Times and The Sunday Times. I'm Manveen Rana. Today, Prescription Nation, Britain's Hidden Drug Dependency.
My name is Venetia Mingus. I'm a data and digital journalist at The Times and Sunday Times.
Venetia, you're a real specialist in number crunching, and you've identified this really alarming trend when it comes to prescription drugs. This is something that could be a real problem. Just give us a sense of the picture.
Well, one in four drugs that are prescribed to adults in England are dependency-forming drugs. And Public Health England define dependency-forming drugs as those that you experience withdrawal symptoms when you try and stop. So to think that one in four prescriptions could possibly lead to addiction, you can see that's quite a lot. There are four types mainly of dependency-forming drugs. And what we've seen for most of them, such as opioids and benzodiazepines, is that as people become aware of their risks of dependency, prescriptions have gone down. But that's just not the case for pregabalin and antidepressants. These two types of dependency-forming drugs, prescriptions continue rising.
Give us a sense of how much these prescriptions have gone up by and why. And just starting with pregabalin.
It's hard to nail down exactly how prescriptions to pregabalin have risen. It was licensed in 2004. It was widely prescribed. pregabalin was actually originally designed for epilepsy. So it's an anticonvulsant that interferes with signals in your brain to stop seizures. That was the original reason it was developed. But over time, they increasingly started prescribing it for off-label uses. And now it is licensed in the UK for nerve pain and for anxiety. Reports started coming out in the late 2000s from Northern Ireland and from prisons that this drug had a potential for abuse and dependency. They kind of continued to fall on deaf ears until maybe 2015-16. This started really to catch up in the medical community, and the Advisory Council for the Misuse of Drugs issued a warning saying, really, we think we should control this drug. And then in 2019, it became a Class C drug. So that means that its sale or possession without a prescription is now illegal.
And how much has it gone up? You know, the legal form, the prescribed form.
So there were about 65,000 milligrams prescribed per 1,000 people in England in 2019. And now there are 75,000 milligrams per 1,000 people in England prescribed. That's despite its restrictions after it's become a Class C drug.
And what about antidepressants? How much have they risen?
So there are now 8.6 million patients in England being prescribed antidepressants, and that's doubled since 2011.
Wow. Why are these drugs being prescribed so much more now?
I think one of the reasons is it's been very well documented that there's been a huge rise in the prevalence of depression and anxiety. So that's part of the reason. And another reason is the unavailability of non-chemical alternatives, such as talking therapy, cognitive behavioral therapy, but also that the NHS waiting lists for routine operations are continuing to grow. And that's specifically relevant to pregabalin, as it's sometimes prescribed for pain. Mm-hmm. So say you are waiting for an MRI appointment because you've got pain in your lower back and you've got to wait a year to that MRI, you might then get given pregabalin for that year. Whereas if the NHS waiting list was more manageable, you might be able to go straight into having that MRI.
So basically, you've simultaneously got a period where people are feeling much more anxiety, depression, and looking for chemical cures for those things. And then also with pregabalin, with the pain, you have these endless waiting lists, which mean rather than solving problems, rather than fixing people, we're having to put them on painkillers, which they become addicted to in the meantime.
Absolutely. As the waiting lists rise, the level of people experiencing chronic pain rises with it. And that means we need to prescribe more medications to deal with that pain.
If you were trying to work out how addictive pregabalin, you know, if you had a scale of 1 to 10, and, you know, we know heroin is very addictive, we put that as 10, where would you put them?
So obviously, pregabalin can really improve the quality of life for some people, but we are becoming increasingly aware that there can be these risks of experiencing withdrawal symptoms when they come off. The best answer I can give you is based on what people have told me. A lot of the people I've interviewed have been living in chronic pain, and they've been prescribed so many different drugs over the period of their life. And what they told me was that if they're looking at the withdrawal experience from pregabalin, it was worse than oxycodone. It was worse than all benzodiazepines. It was worse than morphine.
Wow.
So that's really the answer I can give you, is that the people I've spoken to have said that the physical and particularly the mental withdrawal symptoms from pregabalin are worse than oxycodone and last longer.
Worse than opioids.
And I spoke to a doctor who's worked in a prison, Dr. Ian Brew, for decades. And what he knows from the prisoners, the inmates, what they tell him is that coming off pregabalin is harder than coming off heroin.
I mean, that really does give you a sense of how serious it is. I know, as you said, you know, you've spoken to a number of people who've been on it, who've sort of felt the effects. Tell us about one of them.
Hello.
Hi, Debbie.
Hiya, you all right, love?
I'm good. How are you doing?
I'm all right, love. Thank you. I'm just going to take it upstairs.
So Debbie Liu is 45 and she's from Yorkshire. She's a single mum of a young daughter and she works as a nurse. And unfortunately, she had a car accident and she ended up with really bad chronic pain. and her doctor prescribed her morphine patches to try and manage that pain. But Debbie was aware that morphine can be a very addictive drug.
Yeah.
So she went back to her GP and she said, I'm concerned about getting addicted to these morphine patches. Is there anything less addictive that you could prescribe me? And her GP said, yes, there's pregabalin. And even though Debbie was a nurse, she'd never really heard about the addictive potentials or the risks of pregabalin. And so she agreed.
Something she's prescribed because it's less addictive.
Yes, that was the motivation behind the prescription as a non-addictive alternative.
And what effect did that have on her?
Initially, she felt like Superwoman.
And at first, it absolutely knocked my socks off, but not in a bad way. I thought, oh my goodness, these are good. I felt like I was floating, you know. And
she had this euphoric feeling. She felt she could do all the things she needed to do in a day easily that she used to find difficult.
I mean, I won't lie, this sounds amazing.
Right? She really improved her life for a short time.
Mm.
But unfortunately, she found that she needed to keep increasing the doses to maintain that sense of normality. And that's when she really ran into trouble.
So then that's when I started using them as they wasn't prescribed. And I was finding myself that I was going through maybe three or four capsules a day as opposed to the two that I were prescribed, and then I were running out.
She began taking more than she was prescribed.
So she starts increasing the dose more than she's prescribed, more than she's supposed to. What effect does that have?
Well, first of all, it puts her in a difficult position when her prescription runs out and she's not able to get a new prescription for, say, another few weeks. That's when you're going to start experiencing the severe withdrawal effects.
Withdrawal, it's awful, absolutely awful. It's very much similar to an opiate withdrawal. You feel like you're dying.
She was in this cycle where she would get her prescription, take more than she was prescribed to try and maintain those effects of dampening down her pain. But it was really taking a toll on her body and it was taking a toll on her mind. She was beginning to...
Tell us about that. What are the side effects?
So at those doses, she started to suffer memory loss.
How bad?
I thought I was suffering with dementia. I was forgetting to pick my daughter up from school.
Oh,
when I started forgetting to pick my daughter up from school, that's when I knew that I had to stop taking them, because I thought, if my memory is gearing me to a point where I'm forgetting to pick my own kid up from school, there's a problem.
That was really the turning point for her, where she said, I need to get off this drug.
How did she do that? How do you go about getting off a drug that you've been upping the dose for months?
It's very difficult for GPs to provide helpful information to a patient on how to taper slowly on each type of different drug, because that research really isn't there. So this is one of the problems when a drug is created and licensed. The manufacturer is not obliged to come up with a plan as to how you can slowly taper off of these drugs. So even with the best of intentions, Debbie's GP will have struggled to give her an exact plan as to how she can taper slowly, because she doesn't have that evidence-based research as to what is the best plan. So what Debbie did is she went online, and that's what a lot of people who are suffering with withdrawal symptoms are doing. They're turning to online forums and they're trying to educate each other about their experiences, how slowly you should taper. There's so many people sharing YouTube videos of how you can liquid taper, how to dissolve your drugs in liquid so you can move really slowly down doses. And what happened to Debbie was she ended up taking over a year to taper very slowly off this drug.
Coming up, what about antidepressants?
The symptoms I had when I came off were nothing like the issues that put me on the drug. I had been a miserable, existentially confused young man. I would say I had 3 or 4 out of 10 symptoms. When I came off the drugs, I had 10 out of 10 symptoms.
That's in just a moment.
Thank you. Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Venetia, you've told us about the case of Debbie Liu, who had really severe withdrawal symptoms when she tried to come off pregabalin. The other drug that we think is alarming in terms of the numbers and how dependency-forming it is are these antidepressants. Tell us a bit about the experience of one man who, ironically, is actually a researcher into antidepressants.
So Dr. Mark Horowitz, who's a training psychiatrist and honorary clinical research fellow at University College London, he now runs the first deprescribing clinics, which help people try and safely come off their drugs. And all of this is motivated from his own personal story.
My experience with antidepressants was I was a miserable 21-year-old who was very unsure about my university course and... like lots of people, I went to see my GP, and in a few minutes I was prescribed an SSRI, which I took for the next few years.
So when he was 21 and at medical school, he was suffering with his mental health, and he was prescribed escitalopram, which is an antidepressant.
I finished medical school, I did some training in psychiatry, and I moved to London to do a PhD in the neurobiology of depression and how antidepressants work. At the end of my PhD, I read an article talking about withdrawal effects from antidepressants, and I found that alarming because I had not been told about that in my training before then, in medical school or psychiatry training, and drugs that cause withdrawal, like an opioid, are generally not good to take long-term, so it made me rethink what I was doing.
He'd never covered this in medical school. It hadn't been in his psychiatry training, and he hadn't been told when he was prescribed it that there could be these very severe withdrawal symptoms.
I mean, that's remarkable. This is somebody who's actually in the profession. He's trained. He's never heard that. He's been prescribed them. Why was that? Why isn't it something that was better known?
Well, historically, psychiatric bodies believed that it wasn't difficult to stop antidepressants and that withdrawal was just mild and it was temporary. It's really been in the last 5 years that it's become acknowledged that for long-term users specifically, symptoms can be extreme and long-lasting, and they can include vertigo, anxiety, insomnia, panic attacks, brain zaps where it's almost like there's fog, and obsessive thinking. And sometimes for people, these symptoms are worse than the original symptoms that prompted their first prescription of antidepressants.
And for him, I mean, how bad did it get and how hard was it to come off the drug?
He describes it as horrifically difficult.
It took 4 months to come off my antidepressant, which was about four times slower than the NICE guidelines at the time recommended. I did it using a liquid version of a drug. I used equipment at my molecular biology lab to measure out very small amounts. And by the time I got down to a very small dose, my entire life imploded. I began to have trouble sleeping. I would wake up in the mornings in full-blown panic, as if I was being chased by a wild animal, like beating, covered in sweat. And I would stay in a state of terror and panic for the next 11 or 12 hours.
And this is kind of a common pattern, is people will try really hard to come off these drugs, and then they'll have these rebound symptoms come back, such as rebound insomnia, rebound anxiety. So then they have to up their dose again, or they have to go back onto taking the drugs, and you've really, you just, the cycle repeats itself.
For several weeks that I thought, I cannot go on like this. And I thought, I don't think I can live like this. And I ended up going back on the drug. I actually quit my job because it was so destabilizing. And then since then, I went back to training in psychiatry for a couple of years. I then decided to come off the drug again. That's now 5 years ago that I made that decision.
And Venetia, do we know if everyone who comes off these drugs suffers the same withdrawal symptoms, or are some people fine to take them for a little while and then stop?
It's definitely personal. Everybody has a different reaction to different drugs, and it really depends on those individuals. So no, not everyone will experience withdrawal symptoms.
Various studies by the drug companies show that about 50% of people who are on antidepressants will experience withdrawal effects. There's a bit less certainty about how many will experience severe and long-lasting withdrawal effects. Some surveys show that up to 1 in 4 people on antidepressants will have severe withdrawal effects. We know that some people will have months or years of symptoms.
It is also known that the longer you are taking a drug, the more likely it is that you will experience withdrawal symptoms.
And for GPs, you know, who are still prescribing these drugs, I mean, what do they make of all of this?
I think GPs are in a very difficult position, especially if you have a patient who's coming to you who's in distress, they're depressed, they're anxious, you want to do something to help them. And a lot of the time, the GPs don't have much time with these people, and they don't really have the ability to prescribe alternatives to medication because of the state the NHS is in right now. So there are non-chemical alternatives to treating anxiety and depression, such as talking therapy, cognitive behavioral therapy, and the eye movement desensitization and reprocessing, which is known as EMDR, is a mental health treatment technique that is increasingly showing really promising results. However, all of these services are hugely overprescribed, and the waiting lists to see a therapist are just getting higher and higher and higher. So often these GPs are in a really difficult position. They want to help their patients, and specifically in deprived areas where these drugs are more commonly prescribed, they simply don't have the resources to offer a better alternative, and that's why they often turn to medication.
I suppose that's part of the difficulty for GPs. You know, if they are looking for something that will help people through a point of crisis, if they prescribe these drugs for a short period, they might assume that people would be okay.
Yes, and many people are. And for some people, these drugs really improve their quality of life. But that's why it's so important for GPs to have the time to be able to make a careful decision for that individual and maybe try and assess if they have a previous history of addiction. Is there a higher chance that this person might end up dependent on the drug? But if GPs have such little time with a patient, it's much harder for them to make a carefully considered decision when prescribing.
I imagine some of these drugs were expected to be prescribed for just short periods, for short moments of crisis. I mean, is there much research over long periods of time?
So before a drug is licensed for approval, the Medicine and Healthcare Regulation Agency here, the MHRA, will ensure that clinical trials have been done that show an effectiveness. Dr. Mark Horowitz told me that a lot of these safety trials can be as short as 4 to 6 weeks. And in reality, people might end up taking this drug for years. And so we really don't have that research as to how this might impact people and what it might be like if they've been on a drug for years, how they come off safely.
You know, many people in England take them for years. I think there are 2 million people who are on antidepressants for more than 5 years. You know, when we give out drugs for decades, it's crazy to measure them for weeks. You know, sort of like saying, you know, we use antibiotics for 2 weeks. It would be kind of like doing an hour study on them, saying, well, everyone seems fine after an hour, so I'm sure it'll be fine after 2 weeks.
Venetia, given all the factors you've laid out, you know, the difficulty in terms of finances for the NHS to prescribe talking therapies and all the other types of therapy that are available, and these drugs seem cheaper, and if they used it for small periods of time, they might not affect people so badly. I mean, what's the answer?
I guess a lot of anxiety and depression is rooted in social problems. So first and foremost, we need to fix those social problems with political solutions. Deprivation and poverty are highly correlated with prevalence of depression and anxiety. And the more security you have in your life, the less likely it is that you will suffer these illnesses. So I think that's first and foremost. And as you say, we need to invest more resources into non-chemical alternatives. We need to encourage more research into the risks of dependency on these drugs so that we know what we're getting ourselves into. And also, we need more support for people experiencing prescription drug dependence, because it's really this issue that often goes under the radar, and people often don't know who to turn to when they think they're dependent on their prescription. They might not really consider it to be a problem because they think they've been prescribed this drug and it's safe, and it won't be until they stop and they experience these withdrawal symptoms that they see it's a problem. So really, we need more support for prescription drug dependence.
You've been listening to Stories of Our Times, a podcast brought to you thanks to the subscribers of The Times and The Sunday Times, with me, Manveen Rana, and my guest, data and digital journalist at The Times and The Sunday Times, Venetia Mingus. If you're a subscriber, you can read Venetia's full investigation into pregabalin and the rising death toll that's coming from it at thetimes.co.uk. This episode was produced by Taryn Siegel. The executive producer was Kate Ford, and sound design was by Mal Lissetto. If there's a story you'd like us to look into, or if you have any thoughts on what you've just heard, then do drop us a line to storiesofourtimes@thetimes.co.uk. If you've been prescribed any of the drugs mentioned in this podcast, then please don't stop taking them without consulting your doctor first. And if you're concerned about dependence on prescription or any other drugs, please do talk to your GP. If you're having trouble finding the right sort of help, then you can call the Frank Drugs Helpline on 0300 123 6600. They can talk you through all of your options. Thanks for listening. Have a lovely weekend. Before we go, we have news. Stories of Our Times is changing. From Tuesday the 19th of March, we have a new name, The Story, so look out for it in your feed. Luke Jones and I will still be bringing you one story in depth every day, and once a month we'll be joined by William Hague, who'll be interviewing big thinkers and prominent newsmakers from all over the world. We'll still be doing what Stories of Our Times does, just bigger and better.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.